Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Banging Book Club. I'm Hannah and I have with me Alina and Lucy.
Hello.
Hey. That was creepy.
Bangers.
This month we read A Little Gay History, Desire and Diversity Across the World by R.B. Parkinson. Yes, and this was quite a small book. This is the smallest one so far.
Oh, it was definitely a proper museum DK style guide to being gay in it.
Well, I found this book because I was at the British Museum.
Yeah. And it has a very official sticker on it, Stonewall Honour Book.
Yeah, it got an honour from Stonewall.
And the American Library think it's okay, so who am I to say different? When have Americans ever got it wrong? It's a secret pattern trend of me being racist towards American people throughout the internet. If you search for them, there's quite a lot. Anyway.
So if you have read the book, then keep listening. If you haven't, then there is like a summary video thing on my channel, but right now we're gonna just like get down and dirty.
And if history is a spoiler for you, then I don't know how to help you. These are just facts, mate.
Spoiler alert, these things actually happened. Catch up, people. Catch up. This is basically, it takes a lot of objects that are in the British Museum and kind of discuss what they mean and how they relate to the history of homosexuality. At the British Museum, apparently, I've not done this, but it's not quite clear what objects do relate to homosexuality when you're like just wandering around. But if you go online, you can like download like basically an LGBT map of the museum.
Oh, that's really cool.
So you can find all of the objects relating to that.
They should do like little pink triangles on the floor, like breadcrumbs. You follow them around like a gay trail.
But there's like a lot of debate in museum studies at the moment about should you put like LGBT history like and label it and be like, here it is, like massive display, big exhibition about it, or should it just be kind of like unnamed and hidden and just a part of it rather than separated from it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I get you.
I think...
But these were the same debates they were having about women's history, like, 30 years ago.
Yeah, sure. So. I was just going to say, surely it's, like, women history, subaltern history. Like.
Yeah.
My lecturer, who ran our queer fiction module at university, had the argument that we have to segregate and talk about something before we can assume that it's part of the norm. So I think...
I agree with
you.
You
have to have an exhibition of LGBT before you can just integrate it because people are ignorant.
Yes.
And we're all ignorant and we need to do a thing. That's why we're doing it. Just probably sure about the books there.
Yeah, I agree with that.
That's really cool.
Yeah, I like it.
Thoughts, ladies, then, on the book?
I didn't like it very much. I think
don't like gay people, Lucy?
I hate the gays.
I always knew she was a closet homophobe.
Oh my
God. You could tell it was the way she spoke.
No, honestly, I think it's such a cool concept, but it would work so much better as an exhibition, and it just felt like I was reading something I should be seeing. And for me, I found that ultimately, like, very frustrating.
Well, why don't we do a Banging Book Club outing to the British Museum doing the LGBT trail?
Deal done. Oh, why are we even doing a podcast? Let's do it now.
Real life.
That moment when you're doing something and then you already have a better idea. We've even done it.
You're like, damn it.
Don't take the
I know, I just peeled the sticker off. Oh, does this mean I'm sexually frustrated?
I genuinely got quite sexually frustrated reading this book. Is that just me?
You are such a historiophile. What's the word for being sexually attracted to, like, historical objects?
I don't think it was there that part of it that I was being attracted man. To.
Also, this is the first time I've ever seen Hannah blush. Like, ever.
Yeah, why stone penises suddenly make you embarrassed?
No, I just, no, it was just because I was reading on a train and I was just thinking about sex whilst I was reading it. And
to
I
be
was
fair,
like,
there are some statues in here from Pompeii of men with absolutely fucking huge penises.
Oh, the one where it's all flipped over and he's sucking his own dick. Like, but
you're
all
missing
like,
out on Lucy's gestures when she's
so sorry if my parents hear this. Oh.
But those she ones... raised her arm up like a Loch Ness monster and then got it to attack herself. It was great.
In the face. Yeah. But that was based on gods, not humans. That's why they had such massive dicks. It was because they were divine.
That's where I've been going wrong with my dating profile. Search gods.
Gods only.
One of my other gripes with it was like, it felt like it stretched a bit in terms of what was counted.
What, the penises?
No. Vagina joke. Vagina
yeah,
joke.
Vaginas. No, in terms of like what counts as like LGBTQ plus history. Mm-hmm. And, like, the documentation
it does kind
of
say that. It's like, was this homosocial gods? Or was this homosexual?
But, like, androgynous gods, I don't know. That feels more like a less history. I don't know, and less, like, relevant. But then maybe I'm being very ignorant to the experiences of
the gods.
Yeah!
Of these gender-fluid gods.
We're God-positive here.
Yeah, so many gender-fluid gods.
I think you have a point. And I think also... because it's very different to the other books we've been reading, have been
the author
opinion
has,
led.
Yeah, the author has
and
opinion.
Also like point led, and this didn't really have a point. But then that's the point.
It was more like describing objects.
Yeah,
yeah.
But what did you guys think? I don't know, because obviously I studied this, so I was just like, yeah. But like, what did you guys think of at the beginning when it was talking about labels and stuff, and how we can't use modern labels like gay or even homosexual to an extent on people of the past and how they use the term same-sex desire. Did that make sense to you?
Yeah.
So, I agreed with that.
Yeah.
But... It's the same way, like, so loads of people say that you can't call Jane Austen a feminist because Jane Austen didn't have a word for feminist and she never accepted herself as a feminist
exactly.
or believed she was a feminist. So,
yeah.
I don't know, it's really hard because is it a label?
Because you can't call these people
identity?
Gay because they had no understanding of or concept of gay.
But then imagine if there was a world where there was no gender and then... you looked at that world and was like, you're a woman, you're a man. Well, actually, then.
But then you have a word for something that was pre-feminist, which is proto-feminist.
What?
So that
proto-feminist?
Yeah, proto-feminist.
I don't know that word.
Really?
What? New word, Lucy, teach us.
Proto-feminism or proto-feminists are like pre-feminist.
I didn't know there was a word for that. I was just
they're
not feminists because they're not...
How am I even
still
word?
Oh, I like
this. You did the information imparting.
It was me all through my degree.
Does this mean we can call, like, ancient Greek men that had sex with men, can we call them, like, proto-homosexual?
I'm not sure because it's, like, feminist is a choice, whereas orientation is innate.
Yeah, that's true. That's
but it wasn't, but not at that time, because they didn't believe it. There was an orientation. It was, like, only in the late 19th century that they started that... They were like, oh, this isn't something that you choose to do. It's, like, part of who you are.
We basically need a whole bit of vocabulary. because there's clearly loads of stuff that hasn't even been explored by our language yet. And you're right, all these concepts are, like, a bit too detailed.
If I am a sexuality that hasn't been defined yet, and in the future somebody would be like, that's what Lena liked, and she was a ...
And you'd be like, well, how would you feel about being labelled like that?
I don't know.
Because you
I think
known.
Fine, because I think there's also when you say, oh, like when you use words for me like woman and straight, they are definitely what I identify with, but then maybe they don't explain in minute detail what I actually like and what I prefer. And when there are more names for things, maybe I'll be able to more act. Because when somebody says, what kind of guys do you like? I can't really say. Do you know what I mean? I don't have a... I'm like, there are... It's really hard to articulate what you...
I think it's good to point out at this point, that we're all straight. And we're talking about homosexuality and LGBT stuff here. So just bear that in mind.
Yeah. But I think it's also important to do that. And I don't think, you know what I mean? I think sometimes we can be like, oh, that's what gay people read.
Yeah.
They
want to
read about
exactly.
their own histories.
But one of
and
the,
like, that's not.
But that was my fear reading it, that I wasn't enjoying it. And was it because it wasn't my interest? I was really like, not beating myself up about
but
it.
No, but no, because
worried.
It's my interest. It's definitely like...
Yeah, because for me, it was... I don't think I liked it very much because to me, it wasn't history. It was an exploration of objects.
But that's part of history. I did a whole module on like material history at uni, so I'm going to have to disagree with that.
I'm a pain in the ass
material about history.
You're also entitled to find it boring because I find a lot of women's history boring. Like, yeah, I genuinely do. I'm like, I just don't.
I found a lot of
history sorry,
boring.
Lucy, but how could you find, where is it, these images?
Oh, I thought they were so cool. No, I thought they were really cool. I love the cartoon.
We're talking about the Japanese erotica.
For all of you who want to follow along, it's 77.
Yeah, that's page 77.
Seven!
What? Friends? Come on.
I've seen a lot of Friends, but I have no idea what this show is.
It's like one of the only episodes I seem to keep seeing. There's loads of episodes I haven't seen of Friends, but every time I turn
on,
it's like, seven.
A one, two.
I don't remember what's in relation to it.
I'll find the clip later. It's amazing. I love these pictures so much. And I love...
How can you love them?
I love the fact that the dildo that the women have is just massive.
I like that there were sex toys before I thought there were sex toys. And also, I stared at this image for a
trying
really...
Trying to figure out the position.
Yes! Oh my god.
Yeah.
What? Oh no, I missed this. So I was on public transport when
they're having anal sex, but also the guy on top is also just playing with his own penis.
But the way the buttocks are drawn,
and also
it looks
the way
like
that,
he's
the
wrong way round.
And also the way that his feet are. Oh, yeah. It doesn't make any sense. I think he's like an owl and he can turn his pelvis. Like,
yeah,
are you
sure it's not a third person under there?
But no, but there is someone watching. Little man,
that's the whole point.
Tom.
It's like meant to be like a voyeuristic thing.
It sounds like Japan's a very good place to have lived in history.
Yeah. They're less open about sex now, but yeah.
I really enjoy this line. Who's it? The attractive young actor strokes himself as his client makes love to him. Blah, 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 comments.
This was my favourite. Was this my favourite?
Good
quote?
Heavens, the method of having male sex involves some elaborate handiwork.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is what it says.
And then took a picture of it and sent it to my friend.
In the Japanese.
In Japanese, above
and then
the image.
In the one of the two women with the sex toy, in the Japanese, apparently it says, hurry up and put it in.
We're not really that different from ancestors.
Well, I just do have this, like, mental thing in my head where I just always think, like, for some reason, like, oh, they don't have sex like we do, like, in the past. Oh, they didn't really have, like, they didn't really understand sex in the past. I'm totally wrong.
They didn't have words to talk about it.
And but the thing is, sex, you know, they had oral sex and stuff.
Yeah, but also, like, your language informs your experience as well as the experience informing the language that you used to describe it. So if you don't have the language there to talk about certain things, then the experience itself will be different, even if you're doing the same thing. Like, I genuinely believe
so
that.
Weird.
Like, having a concept and having context and having language to understand your experiences will change how you experience it.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. I see that.
Or at least how you remember it. So when say if I slept with somebody and I was like, I did this to them and then we did this and after this we did this and it was here and like, but if I didn't have any words for that, I'd just be like, we had sex. And I wouldn't remember it in the same
way. Or maybe you would show us instead.
Hey!
You've not seen my list.
I've definitely done that with people, like recreating. I've been telling a friend about like sex
I can
that
see
I had
you like
time.
Standing in your head and being like, and then I did this, and then all like rolling on a sofa and then being like, and then I put my toe in my own mouth. And I don't know. What
I've definitely sat on friends before and like fully clothed.
Yeah,
and,
you've
like,
done this with me.
I am not.
But
you've not been
privileged quite a while ago now, so whatever crazy sex you were having hasn't been for like 2.5 years probably.
Or maybe she's got more words to explain it and hasn't had to like viscerally show us.
Or maybe I've grown up and I just don't climb on people anymore.
But aging, Hannah.
I know.
Aging.
Weird.
Anyway.
Lena, what are your thoughts on this book?
I really, really enjoyed the book, but I don't think it was a book in a traditional sense.
No.
And I think if I was looking, basically, if I was really interested in the history of gay sex and gay identity, I would take this book and then I'd pick four stories that interest me and then I'd want to read those books.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think every part of it interested me.
Because it was really brief
about
each thing.
Because like I really enjoyed getting this really brief overview, but that's because I'm not that interested in looking I'm a reader who's very happy with a very brief amount of information that tells me the funny bits. And then it's like, and then they went on to marry them and died or something. Yeah. Like, I don't need to know everything. Mm-hmm. So it's like a kind of whistle-stop tour. But also, there's some parts that I was like, I really want to read more about this. Like the spy.
They were using she in this, but
But
when they did a post-mortem, found out that she had a penis.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. I also think it's really interesting that this is, you know, there's actually a lot of transgender and stuff in it.
Well, all of the transgender stuff that I learnt at uni in terms of history, the stuff that I came across was always female to male. The only, like it says in this book, is that often the only evidence that we have of any kind of LGBT history comes from court records and basically just from the institutions that were trying to oppress those groups. Mm. So it's going to be like a very biased history.
Yeah.
Because they're like the records that are most likely to survive when you're dealing with a subculture. But so the records that survived were basically women being charged with fraud for dressing up as men, because that was like, yeah, it was fraud. Yeah. But then there are like several reasons why a woman would have wanted to dress up as a man, like
the power that it is.
Yeah, could be, for one, she just wanted to like live freely in society, get a job and earn money and own property, and so she was passing as a man just to be able to do all those things. The other could be she is what we would now call a lesbian and wanted to marry a woman and, pretended to be a man so that they could, like, have a publicly heterosexual relationship. And then the other thing is that she was now what we would call transgender. So, like, she, he, like, felt like they were male.
Yeah.
So, like, there's so many... And we don't know.
It's hard to quantify that. And there aren't any stats. It's weird because I think oppression doesn't just breed... like pain, it also just breeds this ignorance, this historical ignorance that we're like, you just erased them.
Yeah.
Also, if you're a woman living in, say, like 14th century Britain and you decide to dress as a man because you want to earn money and get a job and be financially independent, are you appropriating transgender culture?
Did transgender culture
at the moment,
exist then?
Probably not. So it's not offensive. I don't know, it's weird, though. Because
no,
I feel like...
because they would have had...
No, because they're both equally oppressed, surely, in society at that point in time.
Yeah.
But I don't think there was any, like, acknowledgement of what maybe transgender was. They maybe used the word hermaphrodite. Mm. They probably used that word a lot.
But doesn't that mean with both genitals?
Yeah, exactly. Mm. But that was probably, like, an umbrella term.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And this discussion of the third gender
fascinated me.
Hmm?
Yeah.
Just the discussion of the third gender. That's really cool. But no, spy that fascinated you. Tell me more.
We're both so British. We're like, no, you go.
That's like some James Bond. The spy that fascinated me.
That is the next one. Now we've got Wonder Woman. Like, who knows where we'll go.
Oh my God, we're going to have like a transgender Bond girl. The spy who fascinated me.
That would be so good. Just because I think there seems to be a few people in this book that have so matter-of-factly gone through life just being like, fuck it, no, I am the other one.
I am different.
This was just like, he claimed that she was born female, but was brought up as a man to secure the family inheritance. So, but actually, amazing. When they did a post-mortem on her, on him, on them, then, also them because there was no them, there was no... neutral pronoun, so well, can also, we call them them because they didn't know that they could
but also they're French, so there isn't a them
in
French
is there no them?
How the heck do the French do
in
gender
French
pronouns?
Them you have female them and male them for plural, so there's because we have they in the sense of like singular, but you don't know the gender, or like there are they.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
But in French, I don't know.
So much of my GCSE French out of my brain until that moment.
In French, it's il or elle.
It's this portrait of them that I really like on page 79, where it's a portrait of them just kind of looking quite happy. And the historian points out that She looks untroubled by any doubts or conflicts about identity. And all that's masculine about her is that she's got this military badge on her breast. But I like the fact that like he does like kind of put some history as a he, right?
Yeah. The guy that's writing, is he?
He does put some kind of history in it because he kind of points out things that I'm like, that's quite important morally. That he points out that they look happy.
But and is that she hasn't an been accurate as... portrayal? Because it's a painting.
No, I don't know what exactly, but who did the painting?
Whoever's doing the portrait wants the person to be pleased with the portrait.
If they were well off, they're not going to make commissioned it.
Yeah.
Sorry,
Lucy, what were you going to say?
I don't know.
Either way.
No, I don't know.
I don't know. Also, this whole book made me realise that in the British Museum and in this book, there's so much male nudity. And I feel like in history, men were probably as objectified. Not objectified, because obviously they had the power as well, but I'm like, there was so much male nudity in culture.
It was like virtuous and like it represented like strength and masculinity, and like there was this obsession with like the beauty of like the male body.
And then in it says in like kind of early Victorian times, that's why they think people studied classics so much, because it was a way for men to look at other men's bodies in this really acceptable cultural way.
Yeah. Wait, it says it in the book?
Yeah.
Basically, all these gay Victorians are like, I shall study classics. Ooh, naked men.
And is it E.M. Forster that wrote the book? Is it E.M. Forster that wrote the book where he meets his partner and then...
Maurice.
Yeah. Maurice. When they're looking in the British
I really
want
to read Maurice, I haven't.
I know, but there's a film of it as well, so we could maybe watch the film.
Ooh. Next year we could do Banging Film Club.
Banging?
Doesn't have the same.
Oh, how many films involve sex?
Or frantic film, fucking film.
Sure.
We'll work it out.
Sure.
Yeah. Sure.
Sure, Luna.
So I thought, is that why loads of private schools value classics so much? Because actually they were founded by massive gay men.
I mean, like, a lot of private schools for boys, it's a very homosocial environment.
Yep, and it's also one that's kind of based in, like, kind of classic gentrified
I'll help you, you help me.
Like to study mythology.
Also, one of the things that I find super interesting is that, I can't remember which country or time it was, maybe, like, Roman time, I can't remember... But it said that, like, men who love each other and, like, sleep together, that will create a more effective army.
Yeah.
Because they'll better work together and fight together.
It was for, like, chivalry. Part of chivalry was having sex. But then also, so, like, this is what's problematic, is that I feel like a lot of the history in this book, and maybe that's just a lot of the history in general, who knows, because this is probably one of my only windows into this, is very, like... age, like there's always an age dominance.
Yeah,
the young more boy,
and it's always like, symbolized by a beard and a non-beard.
Because as we discussed with the perv discussion, like there are situations where we really can't be liberal enough to accept paedophilia. Like there's just no way for me to find any part of my liberalism.
And surely,
like,
in that,
they're
culture,
usually not children; they are like adolescent. Young. They're like teenagers.
But that
they're
means you're bringing up, you're bringing up adolescent men. And so it's perpetuating this, like, when you're that age, you're taken advantage of, and then you become the person who takes advantage.
Mm.
Weird.
But they wouldn't have seen it as taking advantage.
No, but they would. It was a power play still, I would have.
But in the same
way,
because it was like a rite of passage almost.
That's what's so hard about oppression. It's like, if somebody doesn't think they're being oppressed, are they being oppressed? Because there's lots of women in history that are very happy to have 20 children and die at 40 because they pushed them all out. So who am I to say, oh,
you're being oppressed.
So shit for... Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
This is a lot of big questions.
I know.
There's so much to ask.
One thing that it doesn't mention, which I remember learning at uni, which I thought was so interesting, is about homosexuality in the military. Because often, like, until recently, like, it was, you couldn't be gay in the military. Like, you just couldn't. But also, a lot of historians have called the Second World War a national coming out experience, because it was when, and also, like, the Vietnam War and for Americans, it was this national coming out experience, because when they were, like, signing up, like, what was it called, when they were in for the
draft...
Yeah.
Enrolling.
When they're enrolling, they had to, like, state, like, have you ever had any, like, homosexual desires, or, like, have you ever partaken in any homosexual behaviours? And so, like, if you said yes, then you couldn't fight, and you might have to, like, go to a doctor or whatever, but you also had to prove that you were gay. Like, you had to, like, have a letter from, like, a psychiatrist or a doctor being like, this person's gay.
That's so weird.
But it's like, but it basically, war forced so many men and women to like come out because either they were caught or they didn't fight or like, it was like, yeah, it's insane. That's.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I mean, there would...
And also a lot of straight men, especially Americans in the Vietnam War, pretended to be gay so they wouldn't have to go to war.
Yeah.
But then they'd be completely ostracised from the whole community and society.
Yeah, because it's... Yeah.
And that's scary. That wasn't mentioned.
Like, if you were... Right, so imagine if the whole world was gay and you were straight and you knew that if you came out as straight, you'd have to go to war. Would you lie? Or would you...
Wait, say that again.
Wait, so which way around?
If it was reversed, would you admit that you were straight and be ostracised, or would you pretend to be gay and go to war?
I mean...
Because it's weird, as a straight person, I'm not as, like, I don't have that attachment to my sexuality.
I like to think that I would admit my sexuality because also, like, I don't want to die.
I would admit my sexuality because I'm also a Quaker and a pacifist.
Oh, yeah.
So I'd already be a conscientious objector.
That whole actual war thing.
I'm also scared of guns.
Yeah, I would hate to be in war. I feel anyone who can do it, well done.
Yeah, but that was interesting. The other thing that I like that it mentioned was about the Holocaust, because it's like so. I'm sorry, I'm like completely stealing this chat, but. I just find it really interesting.
It's nice to watch somebody enjoy their passion. This was about enough history for me for the month.
Really?
Yep.
This is like literally skimming the surface.
I like natural history. I could read about trees all day. Really? I've read like eight books about trees. I fucking love trees. So you know like Gossip from the Forest by Sarah Maitland is literally the history of trees in Britain?
No.
Twice. So good. Anyway,
wow, Lena.
So I understand.
Okay.
I haven't read eight books about trees. That was an exaggeration.
Wow, where's my historical passion? I did a degree in it.
You'll find it.
Like it's so depressing trying to write a dissertation on women being used as tools of war through abuse. Yeah. Like, I can't say that's my passion.
But it's also just like, what's your gripe? You used the word gripe earlier, Lucy, and I really enjoyed it. I can't remember how, but I was like, I latched onto the word gripe. I was like, when you were like, one of my gripes is that it stretches something.
Mm.
But like, that's the thing, like, what's the difference between a passion and a gripe? Because there's lots of things that like annoy me, but like, I would do them as my job. Mm. Because I'm like, that annoys me so much that I need to fix it.
Sure.
Hmm.
But back to the Holocaust.
Like, I think you have historical gripes, but maybe not.
I have hardcore historical.
Yeah, exactly.
Gripes.
Yeah.
So I think you do. It's just that it's different because Hannah loves sex, and that's why it's a passion
and not a gripe.
Whereas you can't love the oppression of women in war, but you can like
love studying it.
It can be like a thing that you're like, oh, that annoys me so much.
I want to learn about it.
Yeah, passions can be a bad thing. So
I like Gandhi.
He likes you too.
He didn't like women.
No, well, it's complex.
Yeah, it's complicated.
Right, tell me more about the Holocaust.
Yes. Okay, so people who were homosexual were also persecuted under the Nazis and sent to concentration camps, the Pink Triangle. We know this.
I did not know the Pink Triangle thing. Just put
you didn't know the Pink Triangle?
Didn't know the Pink Triangle thing at all.
Oh, it was
did
a
not.
Nazi thing. Don't did know. You also know that basically before the Nazis, pink symbolised masculinity and blue symbolised femininity, and putting a pink... Yeah, I know.
I just dropped my book.
Gender,
for anyone who's
gender constructs. There is no gender to colours.
What?!
But then the Nazis come along and they make the pink triangle, and homosexuality is associated with femininity, and pink becomes a feminine colour.
Is that seriously true?
Yeah. But they
oh, yeah, they didn't use...
There used to be adverts for, like, pink clothes for your baby boy. Because that, okay, okay. That was a strong masculine colour.
You talk
colour.
About the Holocaust, I'm going to be over here processing that. And also, what was your word? Pre-feminism.
Proto-feminism.
I'll just be processing it.
Processing everything. I know, right?
Oh,
so basically... After the war, every group that was persecuted by the Nazis kind of got some sort of compensation, retribution, like the Jews and political prisoners and disabled people, like everyone that they kind of...
Fucked up.
Yeah, really fucked over. Except for homosexual people, because it was still illegal in Germany to be homosexual. So they were just never given that, we're sorry. Basically, they never got that until, like, the 70s, 80s when, it, like, things changed. And so, and especially because one of the things that some, like, historians used to, not to excuse the Nazis, but to, like, explain their behaviour, they were like, oh, these men did these horrible things because they were gay. Like, the Nazis were homosexual, and it's their perversion that made them do all of these horrible things. And so then the homosexuals that were persecuted by the Nazis are like, hang on a second, mate.
Yeah.
Like, look, yeah.
Like, excuse
what
me.
We're looking at is a crisis of masculinity. Yeah. Very different from a crisis of homosexuality.
But yeah, so it's just like, they literally were the, like, hidden victims of the Holocaust for decades.
That is sick, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, the Holocaust was generally quite sick, so it's hard to add to that.
Yeah.
But, like, they managed it.
They got it added to, unfortunately. Yeah.
I'm not okay with that.
No. Yeah.
Also, kind of related, this page was my fave, which is the... Wait, hold on.
Is it the pretty one with the pretty... That's my favourite.
Oh, no, which
the quilt.
One? Which one was the pretty
no,
one?
No,
like
no, no, this one.
That
I
love it.
Yeah, the rainbow.
This wasn't the one I was... But this one is the rainbow poster that says, the family tree stops here, darling.
I love that.
I kind of want it on my wall, even though...
Yeah.
Maybe it's appropriation because I'm straight. Somebody tell me. tell me in the comments whether I'm appropriating cultures. Haven't done
but
it
it's
yet.
Also art, so...
It is also art.
I have a lot of art on my walls.
It's the page that is 103, Towards Equality, and it talks about it homosexuality in Britain, and I didn't know that in fucking 1957 it was recommended that the decriminalisation of homosexual behaviour between consenting adults in private was fucking drawn up, and they presented a massive report about it, and the Conservative government... just didn't act on it. They were like, no, despite all recommendations and organisations, just stopped. Just didn't was
report.
Like, nah. And then we bloody didn't get it till 1974.
And print 67, isn't it?
And also,
sorry. Oh, it was pending.
It was decriminalised in 67, so 10 years after that. I'm pretty sure also in the Wolfenden report, it was also recommended to decriminalise prostitution.
Oh, really?
We've still not done that, though.
Just sitting on that.
I was so stunned.
Theresa May.
Because I think it was about...
Excuse me, sir.
I think it was about prostitution and homosexuality, the report.
But I was absolutely stunned that in India, it took until 2009 for them to decriminalise homosexuality.
Is it 2009?
Bear in mind, in 1947, the first government they had was socialist. So they've been, like, relatively
socialist. No, but it was Britain that, like, messed everyone up, like, the colonies and stuff. Because a lot of... like African countries that still have really strict rules on homosexuality is literally the rules that we gave them.
That was a really great inclusion in the book, is that just they point out, they're like, lots of these other countries still think it's illegal, probably because they were occupied by the British Empire, though.
Yeah.
And I was like, thank you, because
and
otherwise it would have been
converted.
A little bit like, all of those foreign countries still think it's bad.
Yeah,
it's like,
and look how better
it's
we are. But
the
introduction
not.
Of Christianity.
We did.
That's the big one.
It's really hard to, like, not have self-hatred for being British sometimes. Internalized hatred.
I know, one of the things that I think about when I look at the British Museum, I'm like, here's all the things that we stole.
Yeah, I went the whole way to Egypt to go to the pyramids. Guess what's in them? Fucking nothing. They're empty.
They're all in the British Museum. It's all in the British Museum.
I mean, I wasn't indignant for myself.
Also, this Towards Equality page, I thought it was really funny. There was like, excuse my language, / my prepubescent language, but like the butt licking of the guy of the British Museum. Like, I thought it was so funny. Oh, ha ha ha, what are the chances? He was the director of the British Museum.
Branding.
Yeah. What else did I like?
Also,
I
want to know more about a straight ally in inverted commas.
Yeah.
Like, what does that mean?
I thought sarcasm? That when the author's voice came through, it was in really weird ways. Yeah. I don't know. I did think it was very strange.
I think it is really hard to write an impartial history, but like it's a bit impossible when they should know that and they're not. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I feel the same. It is a bit... I think it's weird when people try and do things in an unbiased way.
I want to pose something to you that's like an argument that some historians have about when homosexuality was decriminalised in 67 in the UK, is that actually it was ultimately not a good thing. Hear me out. So you know how people say like 1961, the pill, contraception, liberation of women, it was great. But then there's like this counter argument that actually it made women not be able to say no. Because before, they could say no to sex because they're like, don't want to get pregnant. But they were like, oh, but you're on the pill, so like, have sex with me. And there was not enough education around consent that it was like, it almost oppressed women further. Because
one came without the other.
Yeah, because they were like...
So the tools came without the conversation.
Kind of. And so it's kind of similar to that. Like, 1967, homosexually decriminalised, over 21 and in private. Those are the requirements. And it's the in private thing. And so... I can't remember which historian it was.
Only for men as well.
Oh, lesbianism was never criminalised in the first place. Like, they didn't think it existed.
I've got
another fact about that to tell you in a second, but after this.
I've got a book on my head.
Lena can't handle this.
You look like call the midwife.
Call the sex wife. I'm in need of a sex education.
Oh, Lena. But because it's specified in private... Like, before then, there were all of these subcultures and they were fairly, like, public-ish. Like, you just couldn't, like, be openly gay, but, like, the subcultures still existed and people knew about them and they were there if you looked for them kind of thing. But then this law comes in and it's like, okay, you can do it in private. This historian said that it actually made homosexual people go back into the closet because they could only do it in private. And it was, like, just private, and it said you could still be arrested for kissing in public, holding hands in public.
Oh, it's so ridiculous.
And so it actually, like, I don't know, had some good things, because it was decriminalised to, like, inherently be gay. Mm. Like, it was no longer a crime just to be gay. But it did mean that you couldn't be gay in public.
There were way
more
laws.
But then you weren't allowed to be gay in public before.
No, but it was...
Or because it's not legal to be gay...
Yeah.
You could just be like, we're just holding hands because we're two straight people
exactly.
who really like each other's palms.
Yeah, exactly.
I love your palms, babe.
So it's weird, like, I don't know, like, if there are any, like, old people out there listening who lived through that.
Yeah, could you let us know?
Could you let us know?
No, my parents aren't that old.
And they're also not gay.
And they're also, yeah, that's a very good thing. Oh, dear.
There's that.
The thing about lesbianism. Okay.
I thought you were going to hit my throat. Then.
Oh, no, sorry. So, in 1919 in the UK and then 1921 in Germany, or the other way around, I can't remember, but it's around that time, there was a bill in Parliament proposposing to criminalise lesbianism. So to criminalise sexual indecency between women.
Didn't they have better things to do in 1919? Like sort out the fucking leftover bits of the war?
Yeah, they were doing that and then planning Treaty great
of Versailles.
They were
like, oh. I don't know. Anyway, sorry.
Okay, but they basically, some people were like, we should tell women that they can't do this and it's illegal and punish them for it. But the bill didn't get passed. And in the committee writings, you can actually find it. It says, like, oh, but it will give women ideas, so we shouldn't criminalise it because then they'll know that it exists and they'll do it.
Oh, dear. Us innocent women.
I know.
Protected by the men.
Phewie.
Because I would have no idea that I could kiss another woman if this male-made law
makes it racy.
Tell me not
I could
to
be a
do
criminal
it.
Analyst.
Just can you imagine how amusing that conversation was of all these like pompous old men in Parliament talking about lesbianism? I really fancy, like, I wish I could, like, hear that back.
So is there sexual indecency between women?
That's where I'd go back to.
What, 1919 in Parliament?
Have Horrible Histories ever covered that? Because I think it would make a great song.
Oh my god.
Oh my goodness.
Also, I really liked that they included Shakespeare, but just on one page, because I think sometimes people can get really carried away with the fact that Shakespeare was probs. By.
Fun. It also and, like, really cover clarified history a lot for me. Yeah, because I so much of the colloquial like history we tell each other, it's like, oh yeah, Shakespeare was definitely gay. You know, you get a lot of that, or like, oh yeah, this person in history was definitely gay.
Yeah.
And obviously
but that's like there's good evidence there to kind of like
but I like
think that
a short summary
was bisexual yeah.
with some nuance in
not
it.
That he would have had any understanding of what bisexuality
no, but I think it was a good summary and it didn't even include like so there's the one that I remember was at the end of the one that everybody reads out in weddings, it's like, let me not to the marriage of true minds and mitigate headlines. At the end, it's like, if this be error and upon me proved, I never writ, comma, nor no man ever loved. And it's like, does he mean that if no, like if he's wrong about love, then no man ever loved on earth? Or does he mean that if he's wrong about love, then he never fucked a man.
Yeah,
that's basically the two. It's like, or no man ever loved. It's like, not, anyway.
Yeah, because it's the most romantic one,
and it's
isn't
like,
it?
Shakespeare is purposefully hiding his sexuality from people while expressing it in a really clever way.
Yeah.
So it's really annoying
that.
To be like, he was like, tote the homo, what a puff, because he purposely was private about it by being public about it, and that's why he's a clever little sod.
Also, on the like topic of like when
maybe we
sod.
Use
maybe we
sod.
Say that
sod.
Yeah,
sod, sodomy.
We can't use the word sod, can we? No,
sodomy.
I don't know.
It's I definitely still use it because it just feels like a British word.
I think of it as like
bugger,
okay. I think of it as like cod.
Sauce, guys. I will delete that from my language because it's not okay.
Okay, but on the topic of like you know projecting onto the past, being like, oh, this person was gay, this person was bi. I feel like. I mean, I don't want to speak on behalf, but a lot of people in the LGBT community find comfort in that. Of like, oh, like people like me did exist in the past. And a friend of mine who's bi, we were talking about Romeo and Juliet, and he was saying that like he interprets that whole play as about bisexuality and about it being like this forbidden love. And that being the other love. Like the fact that they're from like different houses, it's like, that's kind of irrelevant. It's just like it symbolizes like homosexual love.
I really like that reading. It's really
and the thing is that like I could be like, oh, you're wrong. What the hell? It's like Romeo and Juliet. It's like man and woman or whatever. But like for him, he finds comfort in that, and that's his interpretation. And he's like, no, I like this because it makes sense to me. Like, do you know what I mean? I don't
that's
know.
Okay.
I liked that, and I feel like that's fine. It doesn't necessarily, but that's different. That's not. It's a fictional play. So I feel like you can do that with it. But when you're actually talking about real people who existed in history, like, you can do that less with that. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Because Romeo and Juliet are characters. And
yeah, you can.
I project all of my shit onto them, so why shouldn't anybody else? You know, I'm like, oh. But there's more Shakespeare plays to do, like, the as You Like It, I think, is what they're talking about in their book.
Where the, all of the cross-dressing, yeah.
I'm reading Orlando by Virginia Woolf at the moment.
That
See,
was mentioned
this was
in this.
Something that really interested me. I was like, since when was Virginia Woolf bi? This got so much more interesting very fast.
Yeah.
I'd love to read more about that lot.
Getting on with that woman who
was having an affair.
Consciously married to a bisexual man.
Yeah,
and
they were
both having sex.
I love that.
The more I know about Virginia Woolf, the more I like it.
I need
Although
to read
Mrs.
More.
Dalloway needs to be rewritten. That was really boring.
Yeah, I got halfway through and I was like, what's
oh my God.
Happening?
I don't
there
think
was no artistic, still
like,
on her
reason
day.
For this to be this boring.
So is the other one better? The other one, whatever you're reading right
Orlando.
Now.
Yes,
Orlando.
It's really like fantastical and narrative and like tongue-in-cheek.
Okay,
but then
so
A Room of One's
read...
Own is excellent. If she writes in her own voice, then it's great. I just don't know if I like her fiction very much. But I'm enjoying Orlando so far.
Amazing.
Cool. Final thoughts, ladies, on A Little Gay History.
It was a little gay.
But not for you. Not a little gay for me.
Were you gay for this book?
No.
No.
My orientations shined through.
I really like the last sentence, and it says, history does not belong only to the mainstream victors, and minorities should not feel as though they are marginal. On a long view, no one occupies the centre. It belongs to all of us.
Woo!
Which is kind of cool, but also kind of belongs to them.
Yeah.
This bit belongs to them.
But I think that we should also learn about it.
I think it's a great overview, and if you can't get to a museum or you don't desire to spend a long time in a museum, it's a great way.
Or also a long time reading a longer book.
Yeah.
It really is an exhibition in a book.
Yeah. My impressions of LGBT history were, like, pretty grey, and now they're a little bit rainbow.
Aww.
But yeah, no, I think it's just a good overview to be like, I'm aware that that happened.
I think one of the other things about why, like, learning about the history of homosexuality is, like, so important is because any other history of marginalised groups gets passed on through the families. So, like, I'm Jewish, and I learnt about Jewish history from my mum and my grandma and all of that. Like, and if you're born into any other marginalised group where it is, like, you're born into it, like, your parents are the same as you, then you learn about it through your family. Even if the mainstream aren't talking about it, you still learn about it. Whereas if you're gay, if you're LGBT, your parents aren't necessarily LGBT because that's not how it works.
Mm.
And so you will grow up in, like, not you will, but you could grow up in isolation, not learning about your history because your parents aren't passing it down to you. So you actually, like, so it's a lot more difficult to find out your history.
And I also think it's really important to learn about that kind of stuff because it's also, you're learning the history of patterns of oppression.
Mm-hmm.
So you can spot them again when they happen. You go, oh, actually, we treated this marginalised group like this. And actually, the most common thing in all of these things is how the people with supremacy treat people who they don't think are worthy. So I think it's really important to be like, you shouldn't compare every single group of, like, minority that's been oppressed throughout history, but it's also really interesting because I'm like, we've done this before.
I think and it's shit. Every person who's ever going to occupy a position of power in government has to do a compulsory history course on how
You'd
much
hope
they
that
messed
that was
up.
Just the curriculum.
I just wish that they had to, because stuff like this is so important.
I think that the UK government should pay Hank and John Green to give personal crash courses in the British Empire to every politician.
Yeah.
The end.
Because the Americans know best, and now we've gone full circle.
Back where we started.
Wow.
Lena's skepticism about the supremacy of America.
Next month, we are reading Trumpet by Jackie Kay.
Which I am so excited for. Can I just say, this is the book I'm most excited for.
I'm sorry if you hate it, because I'm the only person who's read it and I love it. But you know when you love something and then you're like, it's like
you
watching your favourite film.
Trees. Yeah. I'm not really sure what to do with you.
Okay, so if you want to read along next month, then read Trumpet by Jackie Kay. And you can find a reading list of everything that we are going to be reading for the rest of the year in the description. And December is your choice. So have a think. All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening. As we said in last month's podcast, we are now on iTunes. And we said we would give little shout-outs to people that gave us nice reviews. So here come the shout-outs.
Dylan Saunders.
Woo!
Rowan E.
Woo!
Hannah Taduck.
Woo!
Alicia 2605.
Yeah! Woo.
Coolest dude ever, GSG.
Woo! Your paranoid killjoy.
Woo! Woo.
Come on, guys.
Sorry.
Obsidian 3.
Yeah.
Agnes Derion. The Shadow is Sticks. Farley Granger.
Whoa.
Exhausted Eloise.
Aww.
Bonnie.
Woo!
Livy Liv Lou.
Yeah!
Shut my up.
Yeah.
I am loving all of your retro usernames, guys. I love music 455.
Yes.
Apanel 2002.
Woo.
Nancy L.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Same.
Nancy.
And Sophie Sparkles.
Yeah. Woo.
I hope you do karaoke Sophie Sparkles because I would totally be announced on stage with that name.
Thank you guys for leaving us nice reviews, and we will do the same next month for new people that leave us some nice reviews and ratings.
Yes, please.
That
thank
would
you.
Be great. And subscribe to the podcast.
Woo.
We have exciting news. We said this last month, and now we're announcing the exciting news.
Oh, so much thigh.
We're going to be at Summer in the City.
Woo!
Doing a thing.
Doing a banging book club thing on the main stage.
The Banging Book Club have a slot
at some point on Sunday. We do not know when, but we will update you on that.
And for some reason, yeah, we're on the main stage.
Sex is going viral. Not already.
We're going to be on stage in front of lots of teenagers doing this.
I love it.
Talking about willies. Can we bring actual aubergines?
Ooh.
Aubergines? Aubergines.
Aubergines.
Is this another yes. Friends reference? That's totally
no. No. Okay.
Oh my god, we need to show you that clip once this is done.
Seven. Okay.
Seven.
That's how we should leave the podcast.
Bye guys, thank you. Seven. Seven.
Oh no, I know what it says! Oh my god! Yeah, I know what we're talking about.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.